Welcome all to the Fairbanks City Council work session. It's 5:05. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Tidwell.
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Here.
Mr. Ringstad.
Here.
Mr. Marney.
I'm here.
Ms. Therrien.
Here.
Mr. Cleworth.
Here.
Mayor O'Neill.
Here. We have a quorum, and today we have one item on our work session, which is our 2025 City Legislative and Capital Priorities discussion with the Interior Delegation. So everyone should have a copy of the finalized priorities. Does everybody have a copy of that? All right, see no wildly flailing arms. So we'll just go through this and then hold a discussion. Council, if you want to weigh in on an item, please feel free. I'll just introduce it and y'all can add any comment that you'd like. We took a little bit of a different stab this year at how we did our priorities. We started with one or two major priorities of legislation. And then we divided the rest of them into operational and capital priorities. So starting at the top, we started with an update, Alaska AS 4025-110, to allow for fees to be applied for any video copying and or editing required for a public records request. And especially Ms. Therrien and Mr. Ringstad, who are part of the Legislative Council, please feel free to weigh in on this one.
So the problem with the video copying is that it takes an enormous amount of time at the police department to edit what doesn't need to be seen on a video. And right now, the staff is doing an enormous amount of time to do that, with very little remuneration, and especially when there's a long video, it can cause a lot of problems and take a lot of time. So we're hoping that we could at least be able to charge for the time that we want. And maybe John can fill in a little bit, but sometimes when somebody that wants to put it on Facebook or on the other entities on the internet, it can cause a lot of problems, especially expenses.
Some of the, you see it all the time when they go through and got to redact all the faces that aren't relevant to the incident. So there's a lot of that, and you're having, lawyers coming in trying to go through and want more and more and more, as well as some of the people that are putting videos online and, all these whatever cop videos that they're running online. What we've seen, the number of requests going up significantly. And it's not just us. I'm assuming every, all police departments all over the state are doing the same thing. People are just asking. It's not really a local issue, but at some point you got to say, we can't just hire additional staff just to keep these people happy and never charge them for the work. They can come in, a lawyer can come in and ask you for a lot of material and maybe find something, maybe not, but they get paid to keep looking. So we're just trying to find a way that will work for us and for everybody to adjust the fees, and apparently it's in a statute as opposed to our local controls here. So
I just want to mention that Yuri Morgan, our lobbyist, is also online. So if there are any questions, Yuri, please feel free to chime in. Ms. Sprinkle?
We're also hearing that some of these videos get put to use on YouTube, and so people are actually making money on these things. So it seems unfair. We talked, the attorney and I asked if that could be if it would be legal to add a watermark to the video, and so at least hinder some of that, but it matters to, I guess, whatever we've got state legislation wise as to whether or not we can do that kind of thing. Thanks.
Yuri could talk about what other municipalities are doing about this. Can you chime in, Yuri?
Hey, Valerie, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I know the state is actually dealing with this very issue as well. They've hired on an extra few people just to deal with these video requests. And other munis are seeing increased requests as well.
Ms. Carrick? Representative Carrick?
I want to provide a quick update, and I also have a question. So my office has asked Ledge Legal to draft this legislation. I'm not committing to introducing it at this point, but I just wanted to give that update that we're asking it to be drafted, and there were a lot of questions about how to structure this to accomplish the goal that's listed here. Just one quick question I have is, can anybody speak to how much 5-person hours in a calendar month is approximately in video time? Like, are we talking about 20 minutes of video, an hour of video? What does 5-person hours typically look like in terms of amount of video that's edited and then given back to the public?
Maybe we could have the chief.
It sounds like Mr. Chard has some answer, maybe.
Just, I've had this conversation with our FPD evidence, and what they've told me is that it takes approximately 4 minutes of redaction and work for every 1 minute of video. And so if you imagine they have to watch it, see what needs to be redacted, redact it, and then watch it again to make sure everything's correct. So if on average, about 4 minutes per every minute of video.
Mr. Ringstead?
Ashley, you know, we really haven't looked at drafting and getting the details, so if we could get a copy so we can try to look at the Ledge Legal drafting of it. And, yeah. Cool. Thanks.
Mr. Sanders, did you have something to add?
I was just going to say that the folks on YouTube, they know that the 5 hours too, so they will adjust their request so that they are just hitting that 5 hour each time so that it's free. And then they just come back with another one and another one, another one.
Okay, the second one that we have is, I'm sorry?
Yeah, I was just wondering what the city charges for anything that's over the 5 hours. So do you guys have a fee structure in place for anything that's over 5 hours right now?
Mr. Chard?
Per statute and code, we have to charge the actual cost of producing the video. So the system that we use has whoever the individual that's doing the work, it actually has their pay, and it figures out how much time that they've put in to figure out the actual cost of producing the record.
Any other questions on this one? Mr. Tomaszewski, representative.
Yes, thank you. So how many hours of video do you guys generally generate per month? I mean, what could this look like, you know, volume wise?
I can say that this is the most requested record that we have. It is for the body cam footage, and I think we had 400 and something requests last year for it. So it's pretty sizable.
I think the question was, how much do we record?
But how many hours of footage do you have? Like, I mean, if one police officer had 40 hours per week or however many hours they work, I mean, are you talking about, you know, I guess you're talking about thousands of hours.
Yeah, thousands and thousands of hours.
It's not just body camera video. It's also car camera video. So if you have one incident, say that incident's an hour and you have three officers show up to it, you have now three body camera videos that are an hour long, plus three car camera videos that are an hour long. So
now you're looking at...
That's on.
Now you're looking at... 6 hours of video for a 1 hour incident. We just had a request for a homicide trial that just ended. All of the case information, and that's over 200 hours just for that one single case. And we've had three different requests for that one individual case.
So substantial. Okay, thank you.
Terribly worth.
I see Ms. Wohlstad has her hand raised online.
Right now we have Senator Myers also online. I'm trying to figure out how to get him to actually be a panelist, so I just wanted to recognize his attendance.
Okay, looks like he's over as a panelist now.
Yep. Okay.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Thank you.
And maybe, Mike, you can talk to this. Chief. I remember some mention of a length of time that material has to be kept. So not only is it something they have to go and filter through, but they also have to, we have to store it for a length of time, and that become, it's starting to become a big cost as well.
Yeah, that's a, it's all cloud-based now, and I believe that we moved over 16 terabytes, if I remember correctly. From our previous, you know, because the FPD has had cameras longer than, you know, virtually any other entity in the state. So we're, you know, well over a decade worth of video. It's, as Chief said, terabytes and terabytes worth of video. It's all cloud based at this point. I mean, some of that stuff is essentially for our lifetime, but the stuff that we can get rid of, we get rid of.
All right, let's move on to the second point, adjust legislation around child abandonment laws to allow for baby boxes. I'm going to look to Mr. Marnie for that one.
Well, I was very disappointed that it got stuck, and I'm saying that politely. I testified telephonically three times, and I just it's not going to cost the state any money. It's all donations. And I just, you know, we've had one incident in this town. It's been some time ago, but the way society is anymore, it could happen any day. And I would feel bad. I would think you guys would feel bad also as if we didn't get this passed. I think it's up for reading again in January. Am I correct, Frank?
So I have HB 74, I think is the correct number for the baby box bill that I have. And it's slowly moving its way through the House. But the companion bill, which Senator Myers has, and I'm not sure of the, it might be SB 17, I could be wrong, SB 9. And I think his is closer to passing through the Senate. So I believe the Senate has the will to pass it over to us, but obviously no promises. And once it comes over to the House, then we'll also look at it. And I have every I'm an optimist as it is, and so I am optimistic that people will see this as a real need, and it really is the right thing to do. So I'm confident that it's going to make its way through, but we still certainly support or appreciate your support on that.
Okay. Well, thank you, team.
Mr. Meyer, or Senator Myers has his hand raised too. Senator?
Thank you. Thank you. So, we've got it in Senate rules waiting to be calendared. We got it there shortly before session ended, so it kind of got stuck a little bit in the end of session craziness. Trying to get votes to put it on the floor. I do have a couple of Anchorage legislators that are a little hesitant about it, and that may prevent it from getting it put on the floor, which is a little surprising to me because the Anchorage Fire Department is also asking for it. That's roughly where we are.
One of the things that we heard when we were down in Juneau, Mr. Ringstead and myself, was that the state wanted to spend a lot of time making sure that the baby boxes were functional and that they had to inspect them. And we had suggested that either the fire department or the police department would be a great place to keep them. We've then decided that the fire department isn't a great place because we never know if they're going to be there or not. So we're hoping that they could be housed near the police department. And they're very simple boxes. And we feel that their idea of having to be inspected all the time is just a way of not letting this pass. And I've testified along with Mr. Marnie about this bill, and we'd really like to see it get passed without all of these complications about it being investigated.
Senator Myers, could you share with us what some of the Anchorage legislators have stated as their hesitation for supporting this?
Yeah. So as Ms. Therrien brought up, there were some safety concerns potentially brought up to make sure that the boxes stayed in working order. We think we worked through and came up with a decent path on that, working with the Department of Health and the Department of Family and Community Services. They'd roll it into similar inspections, you know, because if you're at a fire department, a police department, a hospital, you already do periodic inspections of almost all of your equipment anyway, and we were trying to roll it into that so that there would be no cost to the state. Another concern some folks have about just the provider, the primary provider, the Safe Haven Baby Box guys that are the primary provider in the United States. Some of them, for whatever reason, a couple of people don't like them as a business, and I don't quite get that, but that's thrown up a couple of red flags. And finally, some people have been concerned about how we deal with Alaska Natives and ICWA and trying to reunite with tribes and things like that. I think we've largely done the best we can as far as wording in the bill for that. But I think some people, we already deal with that to the extent that we deal with it for the Safe Surrender Program already. But that some folks are still having some heartburn over that. So I don't know yet if we can get there. I hope so, but I haven't really had any serious conversations with folks about it since the end of session.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Therrien?
Senator Myers, if you could maybe share that, some of that information, we might be able to talk to those legislators. Maybe you could just send the information to Mr. Sanders and we'll talk to them. And I know with regard to the ICWA issues, we had addressed this when we were down in the legislature, and OCS would make sure that the baby ended up in an ICWA family, so we're hoping that that's not going to be a problem.
I can forward along any information that you have or that you're interested in. You know, if you want to kind of pass some of these concerns along to some of the folks in Anchorage as well, like I said, it's not so much the city in Anchorage, but the fire department has been pushing for this and a couple of their people in particular. So just kind of so everybody's on the same page as to what we're dealing with here, especially because it's a couple of Anchorage legislators that seem to be standing in the way for the most part. I can try to shoot you guys over an email sometime in the next couple of days.
Representative Dieberg.
Thank you, Mayor O'Neill. Through the chair to Senator Myers, thank you for bringing this bill forward. Representative Dieberg, downtown Fairbanks. I'm wondering if you have shared this bill with Tanana Chiefs Conference here in the interior, maybe get a statement from them to help support the bill moving it forward. Just a question, curious. Thank you.
I know that I've talked to them about it, so they're aware of it. They hadn't expressed a whole lot of opinion on it, either pro or con. The hospital association actually has been the one that heard about it and surprised us with a letter of support. So that was nice. But I hadn't heard anything from TCC or any other native groups around town or around the state.
Mr. Ringstead?
You know, most of what we heard is Valerie was saying that, you know, people were, what about this, what about that? There wasn't anything that we couldn't answer and couldn't come up with a solution to. But to me, this is a pretty basic thing. I would have to think almost every community in the state has got somebody capable of taking care of a baby, you know? And at this point, the question is, do I want to look for excuses to not do it, or you just do the right thing? And I think that, you know, if there's issues that we have to address when we come down, let us know and we'll address them. But there's no reason to not do this.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Oh, thank you. So I misspoke earlier. It's House Bill 64. That is the baby box bill that I'm running in the House. And it has passed Health and Social Services Committee. It's in Judiciary where we had our initial hearing, and then we're coming back. It'll be still in Judiciary come this next session. And you're right. There's things to be worked out, and actually we give the department that ability to do that within the bill itself. It's not mandating you need to put a baby box in this fire department, that fire department, or this police station, that police station. The commissioner is going to look into it, see the best process, where they're going to be the safest, where the baby box is going to be functioning properly and monitored safely, and it gives them the ability to make those decisions. So it really should be a straightforward bill that can move forward and be a positive thing for the state.
Any other questions, comments? Okay, moving on to the operational priorities. The first one is reduce the municipality's PERS rate of 22%. And I'll have Mr. Cleworth talk on that one.
Thank you all for being here. This is a good turnout. And I know you have to go and make the rounds in the town, and it gets kind of old hearing all of us, but we appreciate your being here. You've heard this before. The rate of 22 cents on the dollar right now has been around for about two decades, and the majority of that is going to pay off the legacy debt, as you also know. And that legacy debt is still in the billions of dollars, and looking at the amortization of that over the ensuing 10, 20 years is really discouraging. We also know that there's a bill, another DB program being looked at, modified from the original. We also are aware that two of the fundamental problems of the original DB program are still in this document. So we're very concerned that the possibility of more debt coming online is very real. So it'd be ideal if it passes, if somebody would say, municipalities, you are indemnified from any new debt. Because we have no control over it. All we do is pay a bill. In the past, on the second page there, it says page 1 of 3. It talks about this a little bit. There's just one sentence on there to highlight. It says, locally, the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the two cities within have paid $132 million for their share of this liability, and that's from the years 2008 to 2003. That doesn't include the last 2 years. That's just a staggering amount of money. And it's no fault of any of you folks or of us. When I remember talking about this back in the late 1980s with the state of Alaska, with our concerns at the city that the program wasn't being run properly. And unfortunately, nothing was done. So you have an opportunity to, I hope, possibly reduce our rates over a period of time. Because it is a liability that we're paying dearly for that we did not create on ourselves. So I'll leave it at that. You've heard our spiel many times as you've been here in the past. So.
Any questions or comments from the Interior legislators? Anybody else? Okay. Next one, maintain a balance of $90 million for the Community Assistance Fund. Pretty straightforward, but anybody want to talk more? Ms. Therrien?
Maybe Yuri could just go over that a little bit about, I think we're only getting 86,000 now, 85,000, hopefully a very small amount, but Yuri's got all the numbers. And I can remember when I was on the council years ago, it was over $1 million, so we're down to peanuts.
Yeah, thanks, Valerie. Can you still hear me okay? Can't tell.
Yep, we can hear you.
Valerie? Okay, you can. Thanks. Yeah, so, you know, our legislators, our delegation is aware the formula changed about 10 years ago. You know, a fully funded community revenue fund was a lot higher back then. It's $90 million now. I know it's a struggle, you know, with the funding available. The balance going forward in this next fiscal year, it'll be around $60 million. So the statute states that the draw is about a third of that. So the statewide allocation as we stand today for next year will be at around $20 million. And for the city, that about covers the base payment. So we'll be in Juneau advocating for either a supplemental amount to go into this current fiscal year and then to fully fund the $90 million for FY27.
Ms. Sprinkle?
I seem to remember that June Rogers got irritated by the name of the, is this the appropriate name, or was it something before this assistant, Jerry, maybe you can help me. Is there a different name to it now?
Yeah.
And she just felt like that was an unfair way to describe this because.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, just I think this was a touch point for a few people.
Senator Kawasaki?
Yeah, just a question. It was called municipal revenue sharing. It's basically the share of oil revenues that comes to the state and then dispersed amongst each of the municipalities. Used to be $8 million in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. Which was a quarter of the budget for the city at the time. Then when we were around, it was about $4 million. And now it's, is it really 86,000?
85.
Where's Margarita?
I think wow.
Gary will right. Know.
Yeah.
We've talked
well,
about Mr. Sanders.
I don't think it's 85.
It's 85,000.
Yeah.
Is the base amount.
Yeah.
If they do the base amount, I suppose.
Representative Dibert.
Thank you. And just so we could advocate for this, what are some programs it does for folks here in downtown Fairbanks?
Yeah.
Mr. Ringstead, did you have anything else to add? Any other questions or comments on that? Okay, next is maintain SART funding to help communities meet testing liabilities. Ms. Therrien.
This is money that comes to us to help us with the sexual assault testing through the department. And as long as you can just make sure that it comes to us, it really helps us and make sure it helps subsidize the cost of these tests. And it's not a special bill or anything. It just comes through the budget. And as long as you can support that would be great.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you. Do we know what the total amount of SART funding in Alaska is? And then what is the amount that Fairbanks receives of that? Maybe Yuri would know the answer to that.
Well, sure. You know, it's a relatively small amount. There, back around 2010, there was an amount added for some of the smaller law enforcement agencies. It was about $150,000, and that was allocated across the state to help fund these SART kits, or at least the testing. And then when Representative LeBron was chair of the public safety budget, that amount doubled or so. I think about 200,000 was added, so a total of about 350,000. The amount the city gets is really residual when those rural agencies have been funded. And on average over the last, 8 years, has been around 70,000. The city of Fairbanks has received approximately 70,000. So that's been very helpful to go to funding the cost of collecting that evidence.
Thank you. And Yuri, could you just tell us which department budget that comes through?
It comes through the Department of Public Safety. It's in the state trooper detachment budget.
Did you want to add anything, Chief Dupuy?
Yeah, if I could, just so everybody's aware, the SART funding, anytime anybody goes to FMH and there's a sexual assault that they do the exam for, whether or not they want to press charges or go forward with the case, we're required to get that sexual assault kit. And if the address of that location is within the city of Fairbanks, the Fairbanks Police Department is on the hook to pay for that SART test. So those kits are running about $2,500 a piece, I believe, right now. And we can go anywhere from 10 of them a month to 20. On average, we're about $100,000 a year that the department spends in the sexual assault kits. So,
Representative Kerr.
Thank you. So I have a follow-up question. Are they $2,500 a piece to have the kit and to process those results? Is that including the whole cost from purchasing the kit through using the kit, or is that just the cost per individual kit?
Cost to FMH. We get billed from FMH for each individual kit. All of those kits are picked up by the Fairbanks Police Department, and then we send them all down. Whether or not they want to press charges, they're all sent to the state crime lab, and they're all worked up through the state crime lab, so that evidence is there in case somebody comes back later and says, you know what, I changed my mind, I do want to go forward with a criminal case. We have that evidence, and it's there. We can go forward with it.
Okay.
Representative Prax?
Yes, thank you. Is there a possibility that essentially the city could just contract with the state because it goes through the state crime lab anyway?
As far as the kits go, there's an actual whole team at FMH that includes law enforcement that respond when we have a sexual assault incident. So an officer will meet the SART team at FMH, and they do a whole physical exam to collect that evidence and then box it up, and then we pick it up at a later date to get all of that evidence and ship it off to the crime lab.
Right, but I guess my question is, rather than send the bill to Fairbanks that then sends the kits and everything to the state, could we skip a step?
Oh, you mean if FMH could bill the state?
Yep.
I'm game for that.
All right.
I guess that would be a question back to the legislature, maybe.
Should investigate that. Mm-hmm. Will do. Mm-hmm.
Okay, moving on to require a natural gas line spur to Fairbanks at no expense to the community. Any questions? Representative Prax.
How adamant is the city about requiring a spur line to Fairbanks? That's a separate project right now. So that's the first question. And then the second question, has the city talked with Interior Gas Utility to see if their contract with Harvest Petroleum even allows them to move forward? If we had a gas line there, can they take gas from the gas line rather than their LNG tankers? We got to figure that out first.
Ms. Therrien?
I'll defer to John.
As I recall, they've told us, IGU has told us that they can do that. They have the flexibility to do. I don't know if they're buying from the same contract. It's more of a shipping issue than a buying issue. But they have the ability to take gas if it comes in a pipe. The question then would come is, who owns and operates the pipe for the last 38 miles to get it into their system? And how we pay for that, you know, and that's the concern that $200 million hit that hits this community pretty hard if we got to pay the whole tab on that. I guess you say how adamant are you? If we don't get the big line, nobody gets anything. But we're trying to, let's just get it on the table and talk about this and say it doesn't do us any gas, get it here, and if it costs us twice as much as heating oil, we didn't gain anything, you know. So we're trying to keep it out there, get the discussion, see how, I mean, maybe somebody's got a creative idea, I don't know. But we're trying to find a way that gas actually helps the community.
Ms. Therrien?
Yes, and Representative Staff's got that bill, and we're very much 100% in support. But we can't afford the cost of the gas if we have to pay for the cost of it. So we think it's a statewide issue as well as a Fairbanks one, but I think we're all 100% in support of having that happen. And I believe we passed a resolution too. Yeah.
And The number of the bill is fading from my memory right now, but from my understanding, that bill is currently in House Resources. Mm-hmm. It's set to move out, and that's its last committee of referral before it would be able to get to the floor. I know Senator Cronk has a companion bill in the Senate, which I think is on the same trajectory, and we're currently working with Glenn Farn, members of House leadership, to try and make sure that there is opportunities for Fairbanks to get a spur line without little to no cost to the community.
Maybe this is a dumb question. I ask them sometimes, but is there any pressure you can put on some institution like ADA to help assist, because they have money? And I know that they're excited about the big pipe, but why can't they help us with the little pipe?
Do you want to answer that, Mr.
Yeah,
Prox?
Thank you. Representative Prox here. Step A is get a definitive answer from IGU. I am very concerned. Harvest isn't stupid. They have to get their money back. And I think that's going to be a huge obstacle that we have to clear up. Because if that's the obstacle, then there isn't a whole lot of sense in spending time on this. So if we could get help getting the answer from a definitive answer from IGU.
So we'll find the answer.
Ms. Therrien?
Thank you. And please keep John and myself and our chief of staff. We'll be glad to do whatever we need to do to help you as it's going through. And John and I plan on being down there this spring, early winter, and we can work on that. We find it very important.
Madam Mayor?
Sir? Senator?
Thank you. So as far as IGU goes, I spoke to IGU back in February about this, and they said that you'd have to ask them for the details of it, but they actually had a specific clause in their contract with Harvest that effectively helps them get out of it if a gas line is built. So they did take that into account when they wrote the contract. What was that, in 2022? The issue that we're primarily running into, it sounds like, regarding getting the spur line wrapped into the whole project is AGDC and to some extent Glenn Farn are concerned that if we mandate wrapping it in there, it's going to slow down the main line because they only have one permit left to get on the main line, but we don't have, I don't believe, any permits yet for the spur line. And so they are concerned that if it's mandated, that it would put, that it would significantly delay the main line getting built. What they did talk to us about as a suggestion, sort of a compromise, is talking to the RCA once the Fairbanks line is more clearly on the horizon, about charging Fairbanks differently compared to the gas making it all the way to Wasilla and Anchorage and all points further south, because we could make a strong case that we should only get charged the tariff rate on the main line until it gets to the takeoff point, as opposed to getting charged the tariff rate for the whole line. Helps us some. I haven't seen somebody run the numbers on that yet, to see if that helps us enough. But it's something of a compromise position that they have floated with us.
I don't think we'll ever get a spur line if we make that deal. I don't think we ever get a spur line in Fairbanks if we make that deal. Mr. Kronk's staff, I'm sorry, I forget your last name.
Sorry, my name is Paul Mankey. I'm staff to Senator Mike Kronk. So a lot of good concerns were brought up by Senator Myers, and during that legislative session, it has become a little bit, the line has become a little bit blurred about whether we actually can still mandate it to be, the spur line to be included in the current project, because the majority rights were sold to Glenfarne. The line is blurred. I can't say definitively yes or no, but the bright side is, and then just to build off Bernard's point, the bill numbers are HB 119 and then Senate Bill 114 in the Senate. Our bill had good, I had a really good response, I feel like, in the Senate Resources Committee. It's still waiting to be heard in Senate Finance, so we'll be happy to update you on the on any progress that bill makes. Thank you.
And then just as like maybe a final point, depending on if there's any more questions about this, the representative staff has been working with Glenfarne and Glenfarne's lobbyists to ensure that any communication regarding Fairbanks' impact or influence on the overall gas line project is properly communicated. And we're working with ways on, even if we can't incorporate the spur line into the main line, the cost of the main line, to try and find a way to alleviate the overall cost of building any spur line, either through the creation of a separate fund or something like that.
Any other comments or questions or thoughts or discussion? Representative Pratt?
Well, just a general thought about the gas line is that that project cannot withstand the cost overruns that we experienced with the main oil line. Just cannot. Those of us that were around, it was chaos. There's going to be things that come up that go wrong. I really want to emphasize that our main goal has to be do what we can to make the main line go and then worry about all kinds of other stuff. Just so we don't lose sight of that fact. And there's quite a few things that are going to happen. Start thinking about that now.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Representative Prox, did you hear with me in a meeting regarding the placement of the pipeline that they want to avoid the North Star Borough completely because they don't want to pay what would be property taxes?
I don't know. I don't know that they have said that, but that route is set. I don't think it makes sense at this point to worry about that. That route is set, and that would be a huge permitting thing to move it over so that we can claim some property taxes off.
Well,
of it.
And mine was just to say it would be closer, spur line would be shorter. That's where I was going.
Right, but I don't think as a practical matter you can move the pipeline from the existing proposed route. Because it's permitted.
As is.
As is.
Thank you.
Representative Carrick?
Thank you. I just wanted to chip in a strong support. We moved House Bill 119 out of State Affairs this year, and it has a pretty good coalition of co-sponsors. We'd certainly like to see even more co-sponsors that are not from the interior, so that's something that I hope to work with Rep. Stapp on. And we do have a really broad coalition. There is a broad coalition already of co-sponsors as well. I just would counter Representative Prox's comments, because I fully agree with the council that if it doesn't happen in the main project, it's just not going to happen. And every conversation that this delegation has had with the entities that be on it would sort of indicate that. And IGU has also indicated that they can and would purchase the gas. So those have been all the conversations. But I also, with great respect to Rep. Prox, would disagree, because I know that we all here care very much about lowering the cost of energy in the interior and across the state. So just different approaches to get there, I think, different priorities.
I will beg to differ with that a little. Having been involved heavily with financing the four dam pool, we got creative people to figure out how to finance it so those communities could afford their electricity. The state, again, I was there when we did the Red Dog Road, make that project go for that region. We had good financing people. We figured out how to make this thing work in a way that economically you can do it. What we got to do is do the work and get the smart people to figure out how to do it and then get the legislation passed. But there are ways to do things. We can figure out how to do it. We just have to work hard and be smart and get the right people working it.
Ms. Therrien?
Yeah, just as an underlying thought, we need more housing in Fairbanks, and reducing the cost of fuel is going to help the contractors want to build more housing in Fairbanks, and that's a big priority of the city. And we're doing everything we can, including rebating property taxes, waiving building fees, anything. And so if this would help. And, you know, that's a major concern in Fairbanks right now is housing. And having the ability to find a place to live if you're going to work on that gas pipeline. So that's just something overall to think about as well.
All right, let's move on, shall we? Allow Tier 1, 2, and 3 PERS right retirees to continue to collect retirement if they return to work to fill critical shortages under Tier 4. Mr. Sanders, can you explain this one?
Sure. So this is something that Chief Dupuy's really been the person in the city who's really been pushing for this. And what this would do is it would allow the, you know, some of our officers that have retired to come back and continue to collect their retirement, but then also be able to get the Tier 4 benefit as well. The state has a workaround for that. It's a little messy, but we'd like to get it, you know, cleaned up so that you know, it's not the way the workaround is the employee has to be temporary, has to be for a special purpose, and there's all these checks and balances with that it makes it a little bit sloppy, and it'd be nice to get it cleaned up.
Chief, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, the one thing I'll say is the workaround also does not allow the individual to have medical insurance through the city. So that's a huge issue that we have with some of the guys that want to come back. But to speak on a more broader term, this isn't just for the police department or the fire department. This would cover any PERS position, so all state employees. So if I retire as a police officer right now, I can't go back and work, say, for DOT to grade roads as a PERS employee. We're eliminating a huge pool of potential applicants for these jobs by not allowing Tier 1, 2, and 3 guys to come back and work under Tier 4. I had a meeting a week ago with DOC Superintendent Jen Winkleman, and she said there's a huge when I brought this up to her, she said, oh, my gosh, we have all of these retired guys that are willing to come back and work at DOC and corrections if something like this were to take place, but they are not willing to give up their retirement to go back and do it. So it covers a lot more than just public safety. It's all PERS employees would benefit, or all PERS positions would benefit from this by having a much larger applicant pool to be able to choose from.
Great. Anybody like to add anything else? Council?
I think it would also be really beneficial to the state, city for sure, to keep people in our city. You know, people move away. You know, it's cheaper elsewhere, or they want to get out of town. It's just, it's really sad to see people leave to the lower 48 because they can have other opportunities. So I'd love to be able to see people who've worked here, like working here, like living here, stay here. And that would be really, really helpful.
Representative Dybert.
I'm just curious about PERS. Is this full-time position all year, days off, tier four, everything that falls under tier four?
Yeah, so it would be for full-time permanent positions. It would just allow those one, two, and three guys to then come back in under the tier four. So there's still we had a draw, or back when I started in 2005, there were still some officers that were here. The state allowed them to retire but come back to work, but their portion of the PERS wasn't being paid, and so it created an unfunded liability. This gives you the opportunity to put them into the tier four, which is still paying into that larger pot that's paying out all the defined benefit people as well. So we're not creating that unfunded liability by putting them in some other class of service.
So my question is, with this request of be allowing tier 1, 2, 3 to opt into tier 4, as was stated earlier, there's a current bill in place that would return the state employees to a defined benefit. Is this, if that were to pass, would this extend to that as well? Or is the city council asking us to just put tier 1, 2, and 3, allow them to go another tier 4? If someone could clarify that for me.
Yuri might speak to this, but I think because it's people that have already retired, we would want this bill. Right now, we're able to have a couple of police officers come for the summer and help with downtown, but they can't be permanent anymore. You have to jump through all these hoops. And Yuri, did you want to say anything too?
You know, Valerie, I don't have any other comment on that one.
We really haven't, I don't think, discussed that in context with the defined benefits.
And the only reason I bring it up is because it's the current bill is out of the House already. So if that provision would need to be considered, that would be over there.
So are you suggesting we try to lobby the senators to add this to that?
I just don't know if the current request is something that the city council is wanting to add into that new bill. I'm just trying to figure it out.
Representative Tomaszewski?
Yeah, so currently, Representative Tomaszewski here. So currently, my office has been looking into this issue somewhat. I have a staffer that's been working on it. I think one of the issues that has been brought up, there's several. One that I can think of is the time frame. Okay, so you have a retired person retire on Friday and then come back on Monday. I think that's part of the issue that, we talk about bringing more people into the workforce to go on a different project or a different department.
But some of the concerns of not only the Senate, myself, others that I've talked to about that is we don't want to create a system that someone could actually just retire on Friday and then go back to work on Monday because you haven't gained an employee at that point, right? So looking at time, like, do you need to be retired for 6 months or do you need to be retired for a year or whatever? And then another issue with it is, of course, the defined benefits bill that has just left the House, and that kind of throws another monkey wrench into this discussion. And so it's going to take a lot of time and effort to make the best possible legislation to address this issue. Thanks.
If I can just weigh in on that just briefly, I would rather keep somebody in that position than lose them completely. You know, if we say, oh, you have to be off for 6 months, we went through that. Lieutenant retired. He's gone for 6 months, and he went and got a job with Pogo Mine. He's working 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. They have a, you know, better retirement system. They have, you know, paid leave, all this stuff. So trying to get him to come back is extremely difficult. Yes, we're not gaining one, but we're keeping one in that sense. So I think it's a benefit there.
Okay, moving on. Mitigate municipalities' liability regarding the PFAS, PFOA, groundwater contamination, and fund remediation efforts for PFAS, PFOA, groundwater contamination.
I didn't know what PFAS was until about 2 or 3 years ago when I first joined the state or the city and got a pretty strong introduction to it. Essentially, this has been on our list for a while. Essentially, the problem is there's a lot of folks with good intentions out there. They hear pollution and they want to jump on that. But there's a serious lack of scientific understanding about what this is, what the problem is, and how to address it. All of us are going at this alone. Communities across the state itself are trying to tackle this on our own. And because of that combination of those things, this is just a very inefficient, ineffective, and very, very costly way to approach this problem. The city of Fairbanks has already spent over $4 million trying to address this. And in my opinion, you know, I don't think we've scratched the surface. It's a problem that I know not just the city of Fairbanks is facing, but like I said, a lot of communities across the state. So just looking for some support and help at the state level, some leadership at the state level to bring us all forward in a better way on this.
So I know Representative Stapp co-sponsored a bill with Senator Keel that was passed, I think, last legislature that was meant to address some of the costs associated with PFAS gathering some of that equipment and, like, disposing of it in a environmentally friendly way. And we continue to work with the city and others to try and find better ways to kind of mitigate the effects of PFAS at little to no cost to the communities that are suffering from, because I believe former Mayor Pruse was instrumental in helping get that legislation passed. So we're those at the state are well aware of the issues that Fairbanks has had with PFAS.
Ms. Therian?
Is there anybody in the Senate working on it as well?
The last time we worked on a bill addressing PFAS, it was with Senator Keel from Juneau, we continue to have a cordial relationship with that office on some these matters and stuff.
Mr. Cleaworth?
Just one other sideline to that. that training facility that we own was used by the state, by the borough, and a myriad of other organizations. But it's the city resident that's paid the entire bill on that. And that's always been our concern. We're in litigation nationally, but it's not just the city taxpayer that should be paying it. So, thank you.
All right, moving on to the next one and the last on the operational priorities. Prioritize the development and expansion of a crisis behavioral health system in the Fairbanks community. Let me hand that to Mr. Sanders.
Thank you, Mayor. One thing I'd like to say is Brenda McFarland is online if you'd rather that she talk about this. But essentially what we're looking to do is, you know, Crisis Now model is very effective. The local community has really embraced Crisis Now. We have, you know, mobile crisis team. We've had it for several years now. They follow the Crisis Now model to the T. It's the only place in the state that follows it to the T. Everybody else has, you know, like they put their own spin on it, and it's, you know, not as effective as following it the way it should be. The next phase for Fairbanks would be the Crisis Stabilization Center, and I know Brenda McFarland has worked very hard on you know, pushing that forward, and it looks like it could happen now, but the chance of it penciling out in the future is where, you know, there's some definite questions there with Medicaid, and if it's okay with you, Mayor, I'd like to turn it over to Brenda.
Yes, Ms. McFarland, you have the floor.
Hi, this is Brenda McFarland. Sorry not to be there. So this is just continuing to try to keep this in the forefront of your thoughts down on legislation. We really need these all over the state. We've had rural communities reaching out to us, asking about our mobile crisis teams. We're partnered fully with Alaska State Troopers in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, and they've just reached out to us to see how we can get this throughout their whole Detachment D to have their troopers connected to the mobile crisis teams because of the great need they have. And so really getting buy-in from law enforcement, the stabilization centers will be the next step. Alaska Behavioral Health is committing that they'll open one in 2026. And the trust is coming up here on December 10th to look at some of the buildings they have leases for. So it's a real thing. We just want your continued support and to continue to bring it up throughout the session. Thank you. And if you have any questions, just let me know.
Chief Dupuy or Chief Cacaro, do you have anything to add to this?
I think just as Mike and Brenda both said, this is the missing piece that we have in the Crisis Now model or the next step. It is a needed facility within the Fairbanks community. So any help that we can get will not be greatly appreciated.
Yep, thanks, Chief. Chief Cacaro, Fire Chief, Emergency Manager. I couldn't agree more. Couldn't say it any better than they said it. So it's a missing link in the chain, and we're trying to fill that gap to help our community better.
Representative Prax?
Well, thank you. Just to add a suggestion, chain Brenda McFarland to her desk. Don't let her go away.
I think she basically is.
you got to be careful on that. You don't want that to happen. But I'm on the Health and Social Services Committee, and that is apparently working out very well. And I think there is definitely a win-win situation funding that as opposed to not having to fund a whole bunch of other stuff. So it's a priority of mine and any help that we can get from Fairbanks, because Fairbanks is way out ahead of every other community in the state. So,
and Representative Stapp also heavily supports the Stabilization Center. He's had it on his capital budget request for the last 2 years, I would like to say. It's something that our office has spoken a lot with Brenda about. And in Juneau with, I believe there is a crisis stabilization center, both in Anchorage and in Juneau. And the fact that Fairbanks doesn't have one yet is something that we continue to stress when we get down there for the session.
Ms. Therian?
We've been able to start a community paramedic program, and I don't know how information you have, but it's been extremely successful. And in our budget, we're trying to think about putting in another community paramedic and maybe a staffer to help them. But they've helped many people get into homes and have reduced the number of calls to 911. It's just really helping, and this is the last step.
Mm-hmm. Representative Carey.
Well, first of all, ditto Rep. Brock's about keeping Brenda at her desk as often as possible and never losing her. I wasn't aware that we could actually do involuntary admissions at Crisis Now. And I just was curious how common that is. I know it's a really off-the-wall question. Maybe Brenda can give me some information, or we could talk later about it, too. I'm just curious how common is an involuntary admission to the center.
Ms. McFarland?
Yes, thank you, Representative Carrick. The goal for these stabilization centers is to be able to offer the full behavioral health crisis care that emergency room can do. So to include involuntary, for it to be in a much more therapeutic environment that people actually want to go to, with the hopes that more of those would convert to voluntary so that they don't refuse to go in the future. And so they do have the licensing written for that, and the staff that it would require and different things like that. So it would be more staff. But what the trust has looked at is the centers that do it across the United States, and they generally have a separate area. They generally are allowed to use medication as a sedative, like the hospital does. But at least it's done where they're not being held in like a padded room for hours, days, sometimes even weeks when we're talking about teenagers. And the goal would be for it to be done within a couple hours and then be able to then go back onto the main floor, talk to peers, have an assessment, be more in a recovery model. So the goal is to do voluntary and involuntary. And I think it's actually going to save the state money, because I'll be clear, I've heard a little rumor that sometimes people will be told, well, I'll commit you involuntarily because then the state has to pay for that when they're going to the current destinations for voluntary commitment. So if we can change this, we have more therapeutic behavioral health crisis care available and not in places that people just hate to go, I'm hoping more people will go voluntarily versus involuntarily.
Thank you. Okay, and our final one on the capital priorities list is provide $800,000 for the Alaska Land Mobile Radio AMLR compliant radios required by the State of Alaska system upgrade. Chief Dupuy.
I think we could both speak to it, but ALMR obviously is the state's radio system. Currently, I think between the two departments, we have probably 50% of our radios that will not upgrade to the upgrade that's happening later this year, beginning of next year. And so we're going to be having to purchase all new radios for that upgrade.
Yeah, so this is an unfunded mandate to go to TDMA radios. I don't know who asked for it, but I don't think it was me or Chief Dupuy. These radios are highly expensive. Any way you cut the pie, statewide radio systems are amazing and great until those initial wave of radios go out of date, right? So they're getting old. Now there's a compliance update to get them to more of a high-tech radio. And it's very, very costly. It's going to cost the city a lot of money to just continue to be able to push that push to talk button to get to our dispatch center, to get to our responders. It's a lot of money. It's going to affect probably more than just our community, but me and Chief Dupuy know exactly what it's going to cost our two departments, and I can only imagine what that looks like statewide. So we're asking for some help, for something to look forward to being able to keep these radios compliant and stay on the ALMR system so we can communicate effectively with our regional and state partners.
Any questions, comments? Yeah, Bernard, go ahead.
So I see it's listed as a capital priority. Is the has the city created the CAPSIS request for it already?
That I believe that's our intention, but we haven't done it yet.
Yeah, I don't think CAPSIS is open yet, is it?
It's not, but like it, the details and everything, how much money has been raised for it, the narrative and everything, if that's being prepared for when the CAPSIS system opens up.
Yes, sir. As soon as it's opened up, we'll have it in there.
Senator Kawasaki?
Yeah. Also, the history of LMR is that we got into it. We were, all the communities did, smaller municipal fire departments and police departments did, and sort of the discontiguous area of the state did, unorganized area, and like Anchorage didn't. Anchorage, they wanted their own system. They bought their own system and paid for it. So we've had this antiquated system for this long amount of time, and a lot of other communities do too. If you want to get out of it, there's a cost to it. It's an upfront cost, and you know, maybe we'll shed this, but there's a lot of other communities. So if you get a chance, and if you're still engaged with AML, Municipal League folks, other different communities, they're all having this same problem with antiquated equipment. And some communities have gone away from the land mobile radio system and have switched over to something else. Other communities, there's just never a chance where they've got enough cash to do so. So for what it's worth, you know, working with your ML partners is great. And maybe we upgrade the entire system when the state someday has money and doesn't just pass our costs to you through not sharing revenue anymore.
Ms. Therian, did you have something to add?
I just wanted to say the resolution before you edits what our capital priorities were. We had looked at some others, but when we've decided to just make this our one request as opposed to asking for several. So I hope you'll give it great consideration.
Representative Carrick?
Thank you. Also, just thanks to the mayor and all the city council members for this meeting with all of us today. That was actually going to be my question, was to that last point. I really appreciate the effort the city council has gone through to streamline to one capital request item. I don't think it's any secret that the state is going to struggle to meet any capital requests this year at all. But I did want to just ask for an update on the refurbishment for City Hall, which had been a prior request. And I just was wondering if somebody could speak to the need for this building. Like, where are we at with some of those maintenance projects?
Yeah, we've put a lot into this building over the last couple of years. We renovated an entire wing of it. We put in a new roof last year, and then this is for we've saved a little over, well, almost $4 million towards this heating system replacement. We're just coming up shy, and we've been saving for it for years, and the thought was that maybe we could, you know, find other funding sources. It's just there's not a lot out there for it.
Was the deferred maintenance on this building, was this request was higher, I feel like, in previous years than $1.5 million, or is this about where it was before?
We've been saving for this this heating project for many years. I don't remember if this has ever been on the legislative priority list before. I mean, I guess it has been if you've seen it. So I don't remember off the top of my head what it was, though. Sorry.
Okay. It's no big deal. I just was curious.
So we can rearrange the room and move on to our other meeting. But Ms. Sprinkle, do you have final comment?
was going to say, I think that the total bill on the roof was going to be, or heating, was going to be 4.8 or something like that. So it's not a small bill. And we have been trying to put our own money in it. Just throwing that out.
Just want to say thank you so much for you all to be here tonight. In our just a few seconds that we have left, is there anything from your side of the aisle that you'd like us to know as you go into the second session of this the session? Anything we can do to help you advocate on behalf of the Interior City? Representative Prox?
Yes, you really have a great priority list. I really appreciate the work that you put into that. Lots of details. And we've got we don't have 2 months left, but we got some time left between now and when we disappear down to Juneau. So if we could get work on the details of this that we've talked about, follow up on that, and get some hard information to the best that we can, that would really help us both out.
Representative Dibert?
Yeah, thank you for having this meeting tonight and going over your priority list to the team for your hours of work. I'm sure it's not easy. The number one thing that I hear about in downtown Fairbanks is please help with mental health. So I'm really glad that you have this as one of your priorities, and I will definitely be supporting Brenda McFarland. I want to keep her as our sole member and just thank her for all of her work, our police department, fire department, in the mental health, and my office is open to help in any way with that issue. Get a lot of calls and emails on it. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. Anybody else? Ms. Therrien.
On behalf of the City Council, John and I, the mayor and Mr. Sanders, will be glad to work with you on any legislation affecting this. Don't feel that you have to hesitate to call us, and we'll be down there, and we'll try to get you as much detail as we can, and we really appreciate your time and attention. Thank you.
And you can call Yuri anytime.
We have.
We do.
All hours of the day.
Ms. Carrick.
Thank you, Mayor O'Neill. And again, thanks to the members of the City Council. I just would have a personal request from where I'm sitting. The state is truly at a crossroads. We've been at an existential financial crisis for about a decade now. And while it's not going to be on the city's priority list, each of you as city council members holds a lot of weight in conversations with all legislators, not just our delegation. I think it's imperative that Alaskans in general, and especially elected leaders in our local communities, are weighing in about what you want to see a long-term fiscal plan look like, whatever that is, and what priorities you'd like to see for that long-term. So just as a personal ask, aside from this council meeting, I would just ask Alaskans to weigh in, and I would ask each of you as council members to consider, I think I don't speak out of turn, all of our doors for the delegation are open, and we really do want to hear from all of you what your personal thoughts are, aside from just your role as a city council member, about what that long-term future should look like and what our fiscal plan should include as a state. Thank you.
It's a good ending. So thanks so much. At 6:23, the work session is adjourned.